is Bloomberg Surveillance.
In the markets in particular, there's been a belief that there's no way Trump could become president. I continue to argue there is a plausible path.
This divergent monetary policy world that we live in is not necessarily supportive of the U.S. equity markets.
This is QE3 on its way to QE14. Whether we like it or not, that's the reality, and as traders, that's how we have to deal.
Bloomberg Surveillance, your link to the world of economics, finance, and investment on Bloomberg Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Michael McKee and Tom Keene. In our next hour, a conversation with James Bullard of the St. Louis Fed. Lots to talk about in this hour as well. We'll touch on U.S. politics here in a moment. Bloomberg Surveillance this morning brought to you by Cohn Resnick Accounting Tax Advisory to minimize risk, to capture value in private equity. You need Cohn Resnick, where forward thinking creates results. Find out how at CohnResnick.com. CohnResnick, CohnResnick.com. We thought we would talk to someone experienced in the ups and downs of American politics. He was on the watch. This was after Lincoln, I think after Andrew Johnson as well. Chuck Gabriel with Capital Alpha was looking at the nuances of the Republican Party. Chuck, Phil Mattingly over at CNN, of course, our former wonderful colleague, just put out a tweet. I don't have it in front of me, but basically Phil Mattingly reporting that Mr. Trump, who will be with Halpern and Heilman tonight, Mr. Trump saying that we really don't need a NATO. That gets everyone to sit up. Chuck Gabriel, what is the ramifications of those statements to our allies abroad?
Well, I mean, that has this, you know, on top of the president basically watching a baseball game in Havana during a 9-1-1 moment for the EU community in Brussels, that, you know, that just compounds the wound, so to speak, or rubs salt in the wound. I mean, it's just a politically, you know, much, much too an unvarnished distillation of at least some feelings in America that the U.S., you know, from those obviously who didn't fight in World War II and haven't made the great sacrifice and haven't really talked to the greatest generation, you know, who for years have fretted that America you know, puts too much into NATO and that we ought to have more European contributions, more of a two-way street, so to speak, from the Europeans. So Trump has taken that to a very unfortunate extreme and at a very unfortunate moment. And it's just, you know, it's a bit of a metaphor for what's been going on the campaign trail.
Well, it's unfortunate. 2 days ago, Mr. Trump said that to the Washington Post in a very extensive interview by the Post of Mr. Trump in Washington. And the bottom line is the Post wrote it up, and you can read the transcript on the Post website. I urge everybody to do that, is that Donald Trump doesn't seem to have a coherent foreign policy. He doesn't he can't explain any of his proposals for what he would do in the future, Chuck.
No, I know it. And it's somewhat disconcerting. You know, we're in the camp that, you know, has tried to be somewhat calming on this. I think he is winging a great deal of this. He is absolutely responding to a very strong populist strain, however. So, you know, it requires a lot of market patience in particular when you look at him as a would-be commander-in-chief who could really disrupt economic and security alliances for the U.S. at a very key time. But we believe that, you know, were he to win, that, you know, you had very similar fears that President Reagan was going to be very, very disruptive, and he was an anti-establishment candidate that really disrupted Washington. He turned out okay. We think that, you know, that Trump would prove to be a sort of a supply-side anti-deregulation Republican working with the Republican Congress when you're bringing up constructive things like tax reform, et cetera. So we think the markets would get a scare if he were to win, but that I think they would climb that wall of worry like they have so many others since the rally began in 2009.
Mike, we try to keep the news flow balanced here. Senator Cruz on CNN within the half hour flat out stating withdrawing from NATO would be a catastrophic mistake.
Well, people,
there's two opinions this morning.
It's the interesting dynamic of this campaign is the Donald talks and everybody else is forced
reacts
to respond, which raises a question, Chuck, if Trump were to be elected, how would official Washington, I'm not talking about the politicians who are basically looking out for themselves, but the people who have to carry out everything, the bureaucracy, how would they respond to somebody like that?
Well, I think that that's something that in their own wisdom, those who are voting for Trump have thought through or feel instinctively, and that is that he'll have tremendous leverage. You know, it's not as though a Republican Congress can ignore him or that he would ignore a Republican Congress. It's not as though he could, you know, move towards rationality that he won't move towards rationality. I think he would. But he'd have, you know, he would have leverage. He'd have very wary, you know, American allies across, you know, across the globe. But, you know, it wouldn't take much for him to actually, you know, reach out an olive branch and perhaps to use some of that leverage to, you know, maybe not a 45% tariff on Chinese goods or a 30% on the Mexican goods or, you know, 35% on Chinese. You know, he could tone that down for sure, but he would have leverage in Washington to make changes. And those who are voting for him really want to blow up the Republican Party, and they want to blow up Washington. So I think they view that positively, that he would force change in Washington.
Right. How should Secretary Clinton respond to all this? I mean, she, you know, obviously she's winning. I guess she won in Arizona in mixed results. Bernie Sanders taking a couple states. But, you know, she's been trumped by the news flow on the other side. You've been watching this for years. Is it a good thing for Secretary Clinton that the other side creates news, or is it to her detriment?
Yeah, it's one of those challenges that it's one of the probably the tougher things that they game over at the Clinton campaign headquarters with John Podesta and company, you know, quite regularly. It is, you know, part of the old playbook has always been to try to control the media flow. But when your competitor is controlling the media flow in a way that, you know, might be blowing up his chances in the fall, you're not going to fret about having to get out there and necessarily, you know, dominate headlines if they are negative headlines. You know, she has about 70% of the delegates she needs to beat Bernie Sanders and to be crowned, if you will, with about 40% or so of the delegates to be awarded. So she, you know, she can win well less than 50%. I don't think she'll, you know, she needs about another 700 delegates. Probably won't wrap it up formally in April, but it's all but done. So she can begin positioning herself, and she already has, for November, even though she's had to make some moves, you know, in order to finesse the challenge from Sanders. For instance, she's proposed that undocumented immigrants have, you know, Obamacare subsidies and benefits. That's something she'll have to defend in the general. But she's in a fairly strong position. I don't think they're fretting the fact that Trump is dominating with headlines like this, and particularly with those kinds of incendiary statements about removing the U.S. from the NATO alliance. That's just something that is really incendiary.
In the flurry of news after the Belgium attacks, we heard from all the presidential candidates, and I think it's reasonably fair to say that you didn't hear anything you didn't expect to hear from any of them in terms of their policy reactions. So, does this have an impact on the presidential race at all?
Yeah, I think the only impact, and it's such a wild card, is that it really, you know, particularly with Ted Cruz now, you know, now looking at where he is in the race, he, you know, with Jeb Bush's endorsement this morning and John Kasich a real no-show last night, with a bit of a hiatus here now, you know, we're essentially not going to have votes for another 2 weeks until we move to Wisconsin. It'll be a big challenge for Kasich. You know, and then we move on to New York, which should be a big, big day for Trump. So, you know, amid all of that kind of, you know, that kind of environment, it's kind of hard to see how Cruz can break through. And, you know, for the most part, those establishment candidates who and players who can endorse him have done so. So, you know, I think, you know, one of the real difficulties is going to be what can he do to stir this up, to change things. And so he's going to try to out-Trump Trump in some respects, and that's only going to continue this, you know, this negative body language from Republicans, the would-be heirs to the White House. you know, on a global basis for the next few weeks.
Let's come back with Chuck Gabriel of Capital Elf as well. Mike, headlines out of Brussels.
Yes, the prosecutor there in a news conference says the mastermind, Latruy, I can't pronounce the name correctly, was not arrested. Initial reports had him about an hour ago in custody, but they say he is not. They are still looking for him. First headlines out of the press conference. Well, keep you on top of all the details as they come out.
Aravani Quinn was very careful with that. It was media reports earlier. It's a delicacy as we look at all the aggregation across the Bloomberg terminal, and we were very careful there to show that it was Belgian media reports within the cacophony going on this morning, a day after the terror attacks in Brussels. Futures are up 2, Dow futures up 8. Don't forget, in 50 minutes, our conversation with St. Louis Fed President James Bullard.
Now let's check in with Michael Barr. Get the latest news headlines, Michael.
And Mike, Tom, just as you just mentioned a few moments ago about the search for the suspect in the Brussels terror attacks, news website DHNet has withdrawn that report that authorities had arrested 24-year-old Najim Lashraoui. He was believed to be one of the three men on video wheeling baggage carts at the airport. Meanwhile, state broadcaster RTBF reports two brothers have been identified as the suicide bombers who blew themselves up at the airport and at the metro station. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have extended their leads after yesterday's primaries and caucuses. Meanwhile, former Republican presidential candidate Jeb Bush will endorse Ted Cruz. Global news 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists and more than 150 news bureaus from around the world. Now, Mike LaBarre. Mike, Tom?
Mike LaBarre, thanks so much. Oil, weaker fractionally, 41.23 a barrel. Brent crude, the spread almost nothing, 41.66. Maybe 2 days ago, the spread was exactly the same on those two major oil indicators. The euro, 111.84. Again, in less than 50 minutes, Michael McKee and myself with James Bullard of St. Louis.
The news update brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures, they are little change this morning. Let's go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. And here's Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Karen. U.S. futures remain quiet today. Dow futures lower by 4 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures are higher by a point. The U.S. 10 yield at 1.93%. And European markets trade mixed. Germany gains 1%. On the U.S. economic front, at 10 o'clock, new home sales, and at 10:30, energy inventories. After the bellish night, Krispy Kreme Erie PSV missed estimates. Red Hat Q4 billings growth declined quarter over quarter. And Nike Q3 North American futures orders and revenue missed estimates. Shares are down 4.5% pre-market. Regarding earnings this morning, General Mills was mixed. In deal news, Origin Technologies boosted Affymetrix's offer to $17 a share. And in other news, Kyle Bass wins right to challenge patent on Biogen's Tecfidera. And Merck wins jury verdict to seek royalties from Gilead. Finally, some of your Wall Street upgrades and downgrades. HollyFrontier cut to sell at Goldman Sachs. Novartis cut to market reform at Leerink. And IHS cut to neutral over at SunTrust. Live from the First Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
Thanks, Bill. To hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type Squawk Go in your terminal. That's S-Q-U-A-W-K Go. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thanks so much. Bloomberg Surveillance this morning brought to you by Invesco. Investing isn't about meeting benchmarks. It's about achieving goals. Find out how Invesco's high-conviction approach can help. Visit Invesco.com/high-conviction. Wisconsin, April 5th, Michael McKee. I guess yesterday was sort of. Man, you can get a lot of buzz out of it. But Wisconsin is like a big deal.
Well, the real question is, what does Scott Walker do? Does he come out against Donald Trump, endorse one of the other two candidates, and potentially have an impact on the race? Let's continue our conversation now with Chuck Gabriel from Capital Alpha Partners. We talked earlier about the Democratic race being all but over, and you're feeling that Ted Cruz probably can't win the nomination, but can he accumulate enough delegates to keep Donald Trump from winning the nomination, and is Wisconsin the key to that?
He better hope it's not, because, you know, right now he's not really registering up there. It'll be interesting to see if Scott Walker were to endorse him. Scott Walker is a brilliant politician, and I think he may know that Ted Cruz could be a tough sell in Wisconsin. Frankly, Kasich would be an easier sell in Wisconsin. So I think Cruz is in a very difficult position, because after Wisconsin, you, of course, moved to New York, where Trump is ahead by 40, 50 points in some past polls. And then you have a huge trove of delegates in a bunch of states up the northeast, or the eastern seaboard there, you know, with New Jersey, Delaware, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Maryland. Those are all on March 26th. April 26th. So, you know, we have a hiatus for a while here, and it's really hard to see where Cruz can catch on. We're moving to states that don't favor him. Many of them either winner-take-all or sort of a hybrid that would allow, you know, a really big disproportionate vote take for Donald Trump. And so it's a very difficult period as we head to Wisconsin right now.
I haven't asked this question yet of anybody, because we haven't gotten to the point where we really want to declare the race is over. But why don't we start now with you, Chuck? What's the calculation for either Trump or Hillary Clinton in choosing a vice presidential candidate?
Yeah, well, if Trump wins, he might either win in a contested convention or, you know, amid a tremendous amount of disunity going in. So the question is whether, you know, he might try to tap a candidate that would be a bit of an olive branch that could be someone that could be a little bit more acceptable to the establishment and to those that worry about him. You know, Kasich might have seemed a strong candidate, but some frankly think, you know, the more they see Mr. Kasich, he's a little strange. Marco Rubio, you might have thought would have been a great candidate. In the old days, the old adage is that you want a presidential candidate to round out the ticket that would help you in one state, get you geographically and ideologically balanced. So it'll be hard to see. I mean, let's just hope that Mr. Trump doesn't have a moment like Ross Perot did, and he comes up with something out of true, you know, right field.
Well, you bring that up, a third party. I mean, I guess I've heard a little bit on it the last couple of days, but do you just push that aside? That you know, all of a sudden it's April, and a third party becomes tough. Is that correct?
Yeah, except that, you know, you do have this Never Trump movement that's pledged to spend 100 days to do whatever it takes to try to block him before the July convention, and they have discussed, you know, the concept of, if necessary, a third party candidate, which is essentially to, you know, all but blow up the party rather than let, Trump take it over. So, you know,
I think who's leading that charge? I saw a Haley Barbour thing out on Twitter. I mean, he's involved as, you know, the establishment. Chuck, who's the establishment? Who's leading the charge?
I know. I think that phrase is very much overused, but there are some really sort of hidebound conservative groups. And by the way, I have many friends and admired these folks for a long time. But you know, they're like, you know, the National Review and some others that have very, very strong feelings, and they feel that the party is theirs. And I, with all due respect, I think that's the one reason that Trump is now beginning to, you know, hit 47% in Arizona, 46-47% in the last two national polls. You know, it's time for a change. And, you know, the fact that these old conservative think tank groups are mounting everything they can to throw at Trump to try to block him just reinforces, you know, what many have found seductive about
him. Have you seen any evidence they're succeeding?
No.
Okay.
I've seen no evidence they're succeeding. And frankly, you know, I'm not so sure, as much as I really admire Jeb Bush and would have voted for him, that his endorsement is somewhat proof of that. I think at this stage of the game, the party, my own personal feeling, might be better off to try to become unified, because, you know, there are only two outcomes that can come, from here. We either have a really disunited party that, works its way into a contested convention that's a disaster, or they have a somewhat united convention around a candidate that's, you know, a little bit off-putting, certainly a random walk, but one that has at least some chance this fall with his allure and appeal to Reagan yeah. Democrats in the Midwest.
Thank you so much. A terrific briefing. Of course, that before the Helper and Heilman interview with Mr. Trump tonight. Coming up in 35 minutes, Michael McKee and I with James Bullard of the St. Louis Fed.
Coming up, with all due respect, highlight brought to you by Land Rover. If it's in your nature to cast off the everyday and seek adventure, the Discovery Sport was built to help your search. Visit LandRoverTriState.com for special offers during the Only Adventure sales event. Land Rover, above and beyond.